Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Some councils are auditing schools and urging a ban on the terms boy and girl.
For those who are in an open or polyamorous relationship, your relationships are holy.
A gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman.
We don't want to just win the argument about sexuality. We want to use this as a gospel opportunity.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Wednesday. Hey. Witness Wednesday here on Wretched Radio. Hey, I'm Jimmy Hicks in the studio while Todd and team are out on campus today at Kennesaw State University. And we'll check in with Todd in just a moment. But first, before we do, I wanted to take just a second to encourage all of you listening today. I know evangelizing and approaching people out of the blue like Todd does on Wednesdays can seem intimidating. It's even awkward in some cases. I get it. I've been there. But it doesn't have to be. Find something that'll help you open the lines of communication, be kind of an icebreaker with people. Now, you don't need to have anything, but it can definitely be helpful. Obviously, I would recommend that you go to wretched.org and check out our evangelistic booklets in the Wretched store. Of course, I'm biased, but these are great tools and resources to have as you start conversations with people. And if you want even more help and more guidance, you can also check out the Terrified 2 DVD, also in the Wretched store at wretched.org. All right, so now that I've got that out of the way, it's my required cheap plug for the day. Let's check in with Todd and the team on campus at Kennesaw State University.
You'll probably be able to guess what Nick is studying. Look at those choppers. Dude, you got nice teeth. Well, look at that. You're going to become a dentist, correct?
That's the plan.
Cool. All right, so I always think about this. Anytime I go to the dentist office, optometry, ears, I just think about the complexity of the mouth, the eyes, the ears. And I always wonder, how do medical professionals account for just the intricacy of the human body?
It's a loaded question.
It's a big one.
How do I explain the intricacy?
Yeah.
Evolution, I guess. Millions and millions of years of biology happening, I guess.
See, that's why every time I'm with somebody like you, I have to confess, I kind of go, but it's like, look at how, like, your bicuspids, I think that's what they're called, right? And your molars, they're like in the right place, and they're on a jaw, which has a mandible so that it can actually move and it can serve its function, and it's got to be connected to the gums, and you got the roots and the nerve endings. And I always think all of that stuff had to be designed because it's just too intricate to be random. So you would say, nope, it's random.
No, not random. I mean, are you coming at this of like a religious?
Well, I would.
Both. I think it could be both together. Simply from like a evolution perspective, though, you see millions and millions of years of one adaptation, specifically training one trait, and that's kind of like your environment. Like the human mouth, I know, has developed over millions of years. It used to be a lot longer, kind of in the shape of dogs, I think. I could be making that up, but I know it was differently shaped at some point, and at some point, it kind of developed to where, like, the molars now, they're more for the grinding, whereas before, our teeth were more flared like this and more designed for tearing things. So we still have both of those functions. They change over time as far as...
But, yeah, Nick, I would agree with you, but I would call that microevolution, because they used to be teeth like this. Now they're teeth like that, but they're still teeth.
Right.
So I would go with you on the microevolution idea, but I'm talking about as a human being, you didn't used to have teeth, but then somehow we developed teeth. But in order to develop teeth, you had to have a root system. In order to have roots, you had to have that jawline. So everything just kind of had a need to, it had to be there altogether. Otherwise, it would have no purpose,
right,
and it wouldn't evolve without all of the other elements coming together at just the right time. So I always see that stuff like the mouth and the eyes and the ears as just, it screams to me that there was a creator who designed it because it's just too designed for my understanding. What are your thoughts?
I think that it could be a little bit of both. Maybe there was a creator who kind of put the starting ingredients and made the cake.
All right, but the cake still needs to be made.
It's always being made, I guess, right?
Well,
turning.
True, but if I'm going to use your illustration, you got to do the recipe, the eggs, the flour, the batter, it's got to be whipped, got to be put into a pan. The oven has to exist, set to a certain temperature, cooked just right. Otherwise, you burn it or undercook it. That's just a lot of intelligent design going on. And so I keep looking and going, I don't know, this random thing takes a little bit too much faith for me. That's my take.
I guess the earth is kind of, like, earth as a whole, I guess, to your point, is everything that specifically needs to be, and that's there. Is that right? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I think, for instance, a mouse trap. There's, I think, like 5 or 6 moving parts to a mouse trap. You got that little board, you got the spring, you got the whacker thing. Yeah, and if you took any one of those little elements away, the trigger, the little thing, and then the hook for it to go into, take any of them away, and it doesn't work. It doesn't function. And so it would just atrophy. It wouldn't do anything. It needs all of those parts at the exact right time, or it won't function. Same thing is true with the human mouth. If all of the components of the human mouth didn't happen at the same time, there's no reason for you to grow roots if you don't have teeth. And if you don't have teeth and you don't have, it just all needs to happen together. And so I just keep concluding there has got to be an intelligent designer because we're just too intelligently designed. I think it's almost a watertight argument for the existence of a divine being. Your thoughts?
Yeah.
You go with that? You like it? Are you a religious guy?
I don't necessarily follow one religion. I grew up in kind of a multi-ethnic back home. So my mom, I was baptized Catholic, I guess I should start. My mom's from Nebraska, raised Catholic, and my dad is from South Africa, Indian Hindu background. And so his side of the family is more religious than my mom's. My grandmother is very, very strong faith in Hinduism. And I think that together I've just kind of seen ups and downs, similarities, discrepancies, I guess. So I think as a whole, I agree with what you're saying. I certainly think there's something above us and all that. I don't know if I can say this one religion has it all down.
Who it is. Yeah. All right.
There's a lot of overlap between a lot of them, a lot of religions.
Well, I think that each of the religions attempts to answer the big philosophical questions. Origins, where did I come from? Why am I here? How am I supposed to live? And what exactly is going to happen to me when I die? I think they all try to answer that. And this is how I kind of put it together. I think that a religion needs to answer all of those questions, which they all do, but they need to do it coherently. In other words, they need to be consistent internally with their own argument. They can't contradict themselves. And I think externally, we need to be able to verify, you know what, that comports with reality. That aligns with the way that the world actually is. And so when I look at a religion, it has to hit all of those satisfactorily, coherently, without contradiction, in a satisfying way. That's how I think you judge whether a religion is worth following or not.
Yeah, sounds right, yeah.
All right, so I'll tell you what. Let me ask you. Let me give it a go with you. I'm a Christian. All right, so I just tip my hand. I'm a Christian. Let me see if I can explain those boxes, and you tell me if you think this is coherent and satisfactory. All right? So origin, I don't think that you're lucky. I think you're designed. It's too intricate. Your mouth is too intricately designed to not account for a designer. So I do believe that there is a God and that we are actually made. And from a Christian perspective, that's what the holy book of the Bible says, that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, that God actually knit Nick together in his mother's womb. So God, you're so intricately designed, he actually wove you together to make you exactly what he wants you to be. So that's the origin story. Why are we here? How are we supposed to live? Where are we going to go when we die? That's the meatier stuff too. So here's what the Bible says. God created you. You are owned by him. He is holy, he is good, he is righteous, he is perfect, and we have a problem, we're not. We don't always obey, and he's given us a conscience, that courtroom in your brain, you know, that little thing that tells you, Nick, you shouldn't be doing this, or that was a bad thing to do, that he's given you a conscience to know that lying or stealing or lusting or looking at porn, dishonoring your parents, that those things are bad, that those things are wrong. And because God is just, he is going to hold us all accountable. So criminals aren't going to get away. You know, when you watch the news and it's like murder cases. I think like half the murder cases aren't even solved. So somebody's running around a murderer. God's not going to let anybody get away with anything because he's just. So there's going to be a day of judgment where God is going to open up the books on Nick and on me and on everybody else to make sure that crimes are accounted for. And when he discovers that we are guilty because of his justice, he is going to give every criminal what they deserve. Justice will be satisfied. And so his penal system, the punishment system, is a place called hell where people go because of their crimes, not just committed against one another, but against God himself. So the Christian worldview would say everybody on the planet, because they've broken the laws, deserves to go to hell. And I'll just stop right there and get your thoughts, because there's one last little note on the story. Tell me what your response to what I just said.
That everyone's going to go to hell?
Should.
Stupid. I mean, okay. I don't know.
Stupid is a word. All right, why?
Maybe not stupid. That's, how do you get someone to go behind that if there's no hope?
Yeah, right. No, okay. I, because I'm not done.
Okay, hold on. All right, I'm not laughing at you, Todd. I'm laughing with you, I think, I hope. All right, your gospel presentation is not stupid. I promise it's not, but we do need to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue this chat with Todd and Nick at Kennesaw State University. It's a Witness Wednesday on Wretched Radio.
You ever notice how Christians sometimes dance around the J word? You know, judging. Yeah, we've gotten so scared of our culture that we're practically doing spiritual gymnastics trying to avoid it. What if I told you that righteous judgment isn't just some outdated concept? It's actually one of God's greatest gifts to protect his flock. That's why I'm fired up about our new resource, Thou Shalt Judge, with Todd Friel and Justin Peters. It's honestly judging how we judge. Listen, if you're tired of watching your loved ones fall for every wind of doctrine that blows through TikTok, this resource could be an answered prayer. 13 powerful lectures that will revolutionize how you view biblical discernment. Plus, because we love you, there's a free study guide included. It's time to stop tiptoeing and start standing firm. Your family and friends need you anchored in God's Word now more than ever at FortisInstitute.org. That's the Fortis store at FortisInstitute.org. Thou Shalt Judge with Todd Friel and Justin Peters.
The life issue. We cannot disengage from the battle. And there is a way that you can win a life and rescue a soldier who's about to be executed through abortion. Preborn.org/wretched. Ultrasounds still save lives. These pregnancy centers that progressives would love to shut down or arrest people for praying in front of abortuaries, they're still doing excellent work and babies are still being rescued. This is a tangible way to save a life. An ultrasound is $28. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. Want to engage in the battle? This ain't about politics. This is about saving those who are staggering to the slaughter, period. Preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Someone you love is grieving. You want to help, but what do you say? This Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, it's a Fortis Institute webinar with Fortis Institute fellow Tim Challies, because mourning those who mourn isn't just about showing up. It's about knowing how to bring real biblical comfort in the hardest moments. When do you speak? When do you stay silent? How do you pray with someone in deep sorrow? How do you remind them of God's goodness without sounding dismissive? Grief is not a problem to fix. It's a burden to bear. Jesus wept, Paul encouraged, and the church carries one another. Are you prepared? If not, join us this Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for a free Fortis Institute webinar, Comforting Those Who Mourn. You can register now at fortisinstitute.org/webinar. That's fortisinstitute.org/webinar. Because at some point, someone in your life will need you.
Important dates in Christian history. 1738. John Wesley's conversion eventually leads to the founding of the Methodist Church. Although he had no intention of forming a separate denomination, Wesley's followers left the Anglican Communion and founded churches throughout England and America.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And we are back here on Witness Wednesday at Wretched Radio. I'm Jimmy Hicks in the studio. Todd is on campus at Kennesaw State University in some kind of construction zone, it seems like. I don't know, but he's been sharing with Nick. And when we last left him, Nick had just informed Todd that his presentation of man's condition was, well, stupid. Was it? Actually, I would not say I agree with that, but let's see how the rest of this conversation goes.
Tell me what your response to what I just said.
That everyone's going to go to hell?
Should.
Stupid. I mean, okay. I don't know.
Stupid is a word? All right, why?
Maybe not stupid. That's, how do you get someone to go behind that if there's no hope?
Yeah, right. Because I'm not done. But let me just see if we can reason together for a second. Let's just say the laws of God are in your conscience, like lying. You know that's wrong, stealing.
It's morality in general.
I think so. And that morality tends to be in India. It happens to be in South Africa. It happens to be in Georgia. It's universal that we all agree, you know, I shouldn't punch you in the nose.
Right.
And you know that, and everybody knows that. Well, I think that God has designed that inside of us. That's his standard of morality. And so we know that these things are bad. And so my reasoning with you would be to say, Nick, isn't it true that you've lied? Yes?
Yeah.
Stolen stuff?
Sure.
Dishonored your parents?
Yeah.
Looked with lust at a woman that is not your spouse?
No way. That's good. Yeah, sure.
Right, exactly. Okay. So if God opens the books on you and on me and on everybody else, we've all done those things. We're all guilty criminals. So God should send everybody to hell, right?
I guess. I mean, in that lens, but
yeah. Now, the question is, how do we get out of that, right? And most people would say, we'll try to do good stuff to make up for the bad stuff, right? But there's a problem with that. Let's say you were guilty. You 10 speeding tickets, and you stood before the judge, and you've got a fine of, say, $5,000, and the judge says, all right, you've broken the law 10 times, you owe $5,000. And you said, but judge, there's a lot of times I don't speed. I've taught some people how to drive. I help little old ladies across the street. The judge would say, has nothing to do with your guilt. Your good deeds cannot outweigh your bad deeds. You're still guilty, and you owe the fine. So good deeds don't work. But what if somebody who loved you stepped into the courtroom and said, Your Honor, Nick can't pay the fine, but I love Nick and I can, and I'm willing to pay the fine that he owes. Here's the $5,000. You are free to go, Nick. You can be released from the law's grasp because it's been satisfied by somebody who paid your fine. Correct?
Like Jesus, right?
There you go. You knew more than you thought. There it is. There's the Christian gospel. There's the good news. The bad news part is really bad. But the good news is Jesus Christ is God, never looked with lust, never lied, never dishonored his parents, died on a cross. What was happening was judicial, very legal. The Father was pouring out the wrath that you and I deserve on his beloved Son so that you and I can have our court case dismissed. So free and clear, you and I can be forgiven, not because of our good works, but because of what Jesus Christ has done for us. That's the gospel. Now, remember our premise, origins, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to live? What's going to happen when we die? God made us. We're supposed to live in obedience to God, but we don't. But he's provided a means for us to be forgiven. Therefore, I want to live for him. And I've got the promise that when I die, I'll have everlasting life. I think that's coherent and comprehensive with dealing with reality as we know it. All right, be honest, because you have been so far. Just give me your take.
No, I agree with it. That sounds like a sound way to approach living life, I guess.
But is it true? Let me ask it at a different level. Is it objectively a true story that I just told you, or is it false? Everything that I shared with you, we should make a decision that it's true or false. Not true for me, because it's irrelevant what I think.
Right.
Not true for you or anybody else, but is it objectively true? That is the million-dollar question. Your thoughts?
Probably not, because, I mean, that's kind of the whole discrepancy with religion as a whole, with people who are atheists or follow other faiths, because there isn't that 100% truth, I guess. whether, I mean, I personally believe that, yeah, that's kind of the way things are, but if I go to cross the world, maybe people don't really believe that the Bible is the objective truth, and or someone who's atheist, they don't, they think it's just some people thousands of years ago who probably weren't very bright and just kind of scribbled some stuff down that someone told them, and I don't know. I mean, I personally think that, yeah, that's probably the way it is, but I was raised here in a Christian community, so do I objectively know for sure 100%? No. I don't think anyone really will till we die and find out.
So the objectivity of it isn't dependent, really, on zip code. You know, you grew up in America. It just, whether it's what you've learned or not, or haven't learned, doesn't really change the veracity of it. It is either true or it is either false, no matter where it originated from, which, by the way, it didn't come from here. It actually came from Israel. So it's a different location. So that really doesn't make much of a difference whether it's true or false.
Well, by location, I mean, obviously, other regions are heavier with their different religions. If you go to, let's say, India, where my family's from, they're Hindu. So they're someone who's born there. They're going to grow up around things, and you take on the traits of where you're from, you know, saying you are where you come from. I was born here. It's a Christian area. You kind of make that argument that you are kind of your environment.
I do agree with you. You do tend to kind of absorb, to follow your community. But I would ask you to consider, you know, those big questions about life. Are they answered in a coherent sort of way?
Sure.
That you do weigh the other religions. You can weigh Hinduism or Buddhism or Islam or Judaism and see if they're coherent and satisfying. It's my opinion, even though I grew up here. And by the way, I didn't grow up in a Christian home, so I didn't have that influence. But I think when you look at it objectively, that Christianity is the only religion that deals with reality in a way that's coherent and aligns with just the way that we observe life to be. It's satisfying and coherent. And I would also say to you, it's objectively true. So, for instance, if I said to you, the president lives in the White House, and you said, prove it. And I said, okay, let's go to Washington, D.C., and we go into the White House lawn, and we look in the window, and you see the president, and I go, there you go, the president lives in the White House. I think the Bible is similar to that analogy. I think the Bible is axiomatic. You look inside its pages and you conclude it's supernatural. You can't help it because of its message, its profundity, its coherence, and it's dealing with life's issues in a way that's genuinely satisfying. I think it's prophetically supernatural. It's archaeologically accurate. The manuscripts that we have tell us that it's exactly the way that the original authors wrote it. And there's one miracle among many that puts it over the top. And here it is. The resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's the linchpin. In fact, the Bible actually says that. If Jesus Christ didn't rise from the dead after he was brutally murdered, then we're hopeless. So here's some spreadsheet math for you, for your finance brain. There were 11 disciples that were following Jesus when he was crucified. 3 days later, the Bible says he rose from the dead. Those 11 disciples were confronted with death, and none of them recanted. Hundreds more saw Jesus Christ, and all they received was they were ostracized from their family. They lost their jobs. They lost their loved ones, their way of making a living. None of them recanted. And this is really crucial for your consideration, Nick. They weren't believing what somebody taught, because you can start a cult and get people to believe what you teach.
Right.
They believed that Jesus rose from the dead because they saw him. So when a gun was put to their head, they said, you're going to have to pull the trigger because I saw it myself, and I can't deny that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. So that's the linchpin miracle that would tell you Jesus said he was gone. Jesus said that he's the only way, and he proved it and sealed it by rising from the dead. And that is how you can know that the Bible is actually accurate, true, and worthy of you staking your entire eternity on it. So that's how I think you can know. You've been honest. Go.
I mean, that sounds overall pretty sound. I just don't know if you can look at the Bible as something that's 100 objectively true, maybe necessarily the same way you would a textbook or something you order at that library. For a lot of reasons, like, they are kind of just accountings, I guess, for that argument. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with it or anything you're really saying, but I'm just playing devil's advocate, I guess. But that's kind of where I come from.
And I think we all agree on that one. Todd, he's overall pretty sound. No, actually, I think that gospel presentation was extremely sound and biblically airtight. But let's all be praying for Nick, the future dentist. So many of this generation have been infected with this postmodern lie. And that's what postmodernism is. It's a lie. Truth is true regardless of your feelings or your location or your background or your family structure. Nothing can make truth untrue. And postmodernism says, well, you can make the truth what you want it to be. And that's a lie. And that's not my truth. That's the truth. More Witness Wednesday is straight ahead on Wretched Radio.